Chapter 11, Self-Control. So I had this weird problem with my jaw, and the doctor told me the only way to fix it was for him to sort of pop it back into place. Sounds fun, right? I was more than a little freaked. "Relax," the doctor told me. "This is a common procedure, and we'll give you this stuff so you'll be awake, but not really, and you won't feel a thing." He was right. They put a needle in my arm, I got drowsy, and that's all I remember. Which is why it bugged me for days that the nurses and staff in that doctor's office smiled at me so strangely when I left that afternoon, and seemed to nudge each other and giggle when I came back for a follow-up visit. Clearly, I said or did something really embarrassing while I was drugged up and woozy, but I have no idea what it was. I don't know why they were all laughing. I do know I'm never going back to that doctor again. People who lose control of themselves are funny. That's why we see so many drunk or stoned characters in comedies. They act like fools, and we laugh. They say stupid things, and we laugh. They fall down, throw up, and pass out, and we keep on laughing. Remember that when one of your friends pushes you to get drunk at a party. Could be that they think getting wasted will help you have a good time. Then again, could be they're hoping that you'll be the entertainment. That you'll be the one saying stupid things, falling down, or passing out. You'll be the one that people laugh at. The thing is, getting laughed at is the least of your worries when you make the decision to give up your self-control. And that's exactly what drugs and alcohol take from you, your ability to control your own actions, to know what you're saying and doing. Quick, what's one of the hardest things about being a teenager? Convincing your parents that you know what's best for you, that you have good judgment. You've got the whole crossing the street thing down, you've mastered the not talking to strangers bit. You'll even, some of the time, get yourself to bed at a reasonable hour when you've got a test the next day. So why can't we trust you to go to parties and to maybe have a beer or two? Because the whole point of drinking or doing drugs is to make you lose that judgment. See the problem? We know that you're smart and that you've learned a lot about how to protect yourself. We also know that one of the ways you learn things is by trying and failing. If you make mistakes while learning how to cook, the worst thing that happens is you make a mess of the kitchen. But if you screw up while you're drunk or stoned, lives can get ruined. We freak over the idea of your using booze and drugs because there's not much margin for error there. The Randall kids were all really well-liked. Tommy Randall, the third born, was 19 and a jock in his freshman year at Boston University. He was a genuinely nice guy and a hell of a lot of fun to be around because he could talk to anyone about anything. And Tommy was the peacekeeper. If someone stepped out of line with his friends, he'd jump right in and straighten them out, as politely as he could, before things got ugly. His level head served him really well on the playing field, where he earned himself a scholarship, and in the bars on Cape Cod, where he stopped a lot of fights. Tommy could drink with the best of them, and in the early summers, before he'd have to get ready for football season, that's just what he did. So one July night, he's taking the back roads, heading to a party from a bar in town, when he loses control of his family's Chevy station wagon. Since he's had about 7 tequila shots on top of a few beers, he has no idea why this is happening, nor will he be able to explain it to the cops later when they ask him how he ended up spinning into a telephone pole, wrecking the car. "You thought I was going to tell you Tommy died." He didn't. Walked away without a scratch, actually. So did 3 of the 4 passengers in the car. Not a serious injury among them. The 4th passenger was Tommy's sister Beth. She was thrown 25 feet from the car. She died. Beth had been 18 for all of 4 months and was getting ready to go to Yale, also on an athletic scholarship. She taught swimming to make money for school, and on the side she was a lifeguard at a local country club. The guys all loved her, though respectfully, considering Tommy and her other equally large brothers, and the girls wanted to be her. Her father liked to joke that she was the first cheerleader ever to get into an Ivy League college. Among the photos on the Randall mantle was an 8x10 of Beth in her cheerleading outfit, standing with her arm around big brother Tommy in his grass-stained football uniform. In it, her hand looks almost comically small on his shoulder pad. At the reception after the funeral, more than one person remarked on how unbearably sad that photo made them. Tommy never went back to school and never forgave himself. Last anyone heard, he works construction, and he still drinks. A lot. Beth's friend Rachel was hit almost as hard. The night of the accident, Beth had offered to drive, but Rachel told her that Tommy was just fine and she shouldn't worry. She was sitting next to Beth when Beth was thrown out the window.